Hello, everybody. I'm Matthew Bright, and I'm a doctoral candidate at The Ohio State University. I recently got back from spending a year and a half in Senegal, West Africa, where I was looking at what arbuscular mycorrhizal fungi are doing in a shrub millet agroforestry ecosystem. And I want to acknowledge that my work is part of a National Science Foundation partnership for international research and education, which funded 5 grad students to go and live in Senegal for a year to 2 years and look at the biology and hydrology of what's going on in this agroforestry system. And we worked in combination with the Institute for Research and Development, a French research organization, and the Senegalese Department of Agriculture, ISRA. And I also work with Dr. Paul Schreiner at the USDA ARS lab in Corvallis. Well, welcome to Senegal. Senegal is an arid country. It's in the Sahel, which is the transition zone between the arid desert, Sahara Desert in the north, and the tropical south. And it's a developing country. It's also a country that's very young, and this is important to note that there are more mouths to feed, and it's only going to be increasing in the coming years. And there's also a lot of people that need jobs. 60% of the population depends on the agricultural economy, and so agriculture is important here in Senegal. When people ask me what's Senegal like, I tell them it's sandy. If you average all of the soil series across the country, we're looking at greater than 90% sand in the soil. So it's like trying to grow stuff in a beach, pretty much, and that's difficult. It's also farmed by hand and by horse, largely, subsistence farmers. And so that makes it that there's a lot of inherent challenges in this cropping system. And soil management is critical here. The challenges, again, increasing population, climate stress, increasing desertification from the Sahara in the north, droughts, climate change, overgrazing by animals, and then inherent soil difficulties, greater than 90% sand, very low levels of organic material, low clay, low CEC, that's difficult to farm. And then no or very low external inputs, so manure, but not synthetic fertilizers. And in the system, what's grown is millet. Millet's a staple food crop. It has a lot of drought tolerance. It's ubiquitous and familiar. It's low risk, low input, low productivity, but it works. And that's important because farmers they might be getting a low return, but they at least get a return with millet. And so the take-home message is that improvement has to come with working with the local resources. One of them is this native shrub that grows across the Sahel. It's not going to come from breeding or external inputs, most probably. If you think millet's not important, it is. This is the November 2014 National Geographic, the current issue. So maybe we should be getting out our forks and our maple syrup and starting to chow down. Guerra senegalensis, the shrub that I'm talking about, grows across the Sahel, so from Senegal, the farthest western country, all the way over to Chad, even into Ethiopia, potentially. It's a very deep-rooted shrub. You can see the man on the left is looking at Guerra roots. And it performs something called hydraulic lift, where it's able to pull water up from deep down in the soil profile and redistribute it into the surface layer, very dry surface layers at night. And you can see the lateral root system in the picture on the top right. With this shrub, millet is grown. And what farmers do with the shrub is they'll cut it down in June when they're planting their seeds, and they'll burn the residue in the field, so they'll just leave a pile of residue right over the shrub, and then they'll seed right over all of the shrubs in their field. And as you can see in the picture down here, millet, the center crop of Guerra senegalensis, grows significantly taller, has significantly greater biomasses than millet away from the shrub. And so we're looking at what my project, it's looking at what's the biology and hydrology that's causing this effect. And I specifically was looking at the ubiquitous symbiosis, the mycorrhizal, arbuscular specifically, symbiosis. And we know from the literature that in stressed, difficult ecosystems is often where mycorrhiza show their greatest effect. Our hypothesis is that a common mycorrhizal network exists between the roots of the shrub on the left and millet. The blue hyphae are what's connecting the two plants, and we think that this hydraulically lifted water is being redistributed and that there are processes of mineralization and stuff that are benefiting the growth of millet on the right, and that it can be seen through this common mycorrhizal network. Again, hypothesized that this common mycorrhizal network exists. And specifically today, I'm just addressing a small portion of my research, but we're going to look at the colonization rates. And we want to see if millet plants grown near to the shrub have significantly higher colonization rates in the different fungal morphological characteristics, because that's what we believe should be shown in the mycorrhizal network, than millet that's outside of the rooting zone of the shrub. We did this by looking at two experiments. The first one was the first ever field study where we characterized what are the mycorrhizal communities there, looking at some sequencing, which data I'm not showing today, and colonization rates, and just saying what's there across the rainfall gradient. And then the second one, we wanted to characterize whether or not the mycorrhizal effect is inherent to the soils, if it's a question of a greater inoculum potential, propagule density, or if the mycorrhizal effects are coupled to the actual growing roots of the shrub and it's not just in the soil. So for colonization rate, we used mycorrhizal roots smaller than 2 millimeters in diameter with intact cortex. Used the magnified intersections method, a lot of work. I did all of the microscopy to keep the bias. And just briefly looking at mycorrhizal structure, the three main morphological structures that we focused on were hyphae, which is important in dealing with the common mycorrhizal network because it's hyphae which grows interradically as well as extraradically into the soil, and that's what will be connecting the roots of shrub and millet. Vesicles are lipid packs that the fungus will make. Different species produce different amounts. And arbuscules, the site of nutrient transfer, giving the plants nutrients in exchange for carbon from the plant. For the first experiment, we chose, we wanted to look at the three different rainfall gradients of Senegal. So we chose two fields per rainfall gradient. So A and B are in the same gradient, D and E, and X and Y. We chose 6 shrubs at random per field, and then we sampled the entire root system and took random root samples from the roots of 2 plants near to the shrub and 2 plants far in a transect spreading out from each of the shrubs. And then just in this, we're just looking at fresh and dry above ground biomass and millet height. It's important to note that as you move north across Senegal, soils get sandier and drier, and that the rainy season starts in the south, so that the germination dates are staggered. In the southern rainfall region, germination will occur about 2 weeks before the middle region, and then the northern region will be 2 weeks behind that. So what we were trying to do is sampling millet plants at the same physiological age so that we could get an even idea of mycorrhizae. Oh, also to note, the northern sites are sandier, but it's about an 8% difference, and this is a difference between 86% and 95%. So experiment 2, we're looking at a greenhouse pot experiment and comparing mycorrhizal colonization routes. This is a factorial experiment where we considered soil type, where we just took the soil from the around the shrub roots, but without the shrub, we looked at far shrub soil, so greater than 5 meter radius from the shrub, and then we took soil from near the shrub roots, autoclaved it, And we looked at two levels of inoculation in all of our treatments. Glomus tunicatum we chose because it's been shown to infect millet roots across the Sahel and also to be good in drought stress. We chose a spore density that was a little bit greater than the average of all of the sites, two different levels of water stress, and two different levels of harvest date. And here, we're just looking at colonization rates and biomass today. So getting into the results of the field survey, these are box plots that are looking at near plants in red and far gray at the various field sites. And what we see is significant differences in biomass between millet grown near to the shrub and far at all of the sites. It should be noted that though we were trying to get plants of the same physiological age, due to the difficulties in sampling in Senegal and logistics and getting around, the X and Y sites were before panicle development. X was 20% of the plants had panicles, but Y, all of them were before. And so we blocked those together to look at. And then the A, B, D, and E we blocked together as well because all of those were at the same physiological age. Getting to below ground, looking at the mycorrhizal hyphal colonization rates, what we see here is very high hyphal colonization rates of the root line, greater than 80% at the northern sites, which looking in the literature is very high colonization. We didn't see, interestingly, significant differences between near and far plants or between shrub, which are the yellow bars, near plants in red, or blue far plants. But one of the take-home messages from this is that perhaps we need to look at this as an additive effect of the hyphal colonization roots in the shrub, the yellow bars, and the near plants. So you can't just take the near plants, the red bars, look at their hyphal colonization rates and say, well, there's no difference. You have to consider that the shrub also is perhaps a much greater effect, and the fact that the high colonization rates in the shrub roots is very significant, is what we think. It also should be noted that at the two sites, the southern sites with younger plants, the X and Y fields, you see almost a significant difference between the shrub roots, the gold bars, and the near plant red. And what we think might be going on here is that the younger plants haven't yet fully grown into the hyphal network that is emanating from the roots of the shrub. Vesicles were the only morphological structure where we did see significant differences between near plants in red and blue and far plants. We didn't see significant differences in shrubs, so I didn't show that. But the significant differences were at the northern and middle sites. And that could be an indicator that we have different species. It could be certainly an indicator that the plants are older, that the nutrient status is better in the plant, and the plant is allocating more resources to the fungal symbiont. And then experiment two, this is the pot experiment, and we're looking here at biomass differences. I know this is a little busy, but I broke this into 40% field capacity and the 80%, and in the panel on the left, the C panel, that stands for the 5-week plants, and the H is the 8-week plants. So, and then the soil types, the red is the near shrub soil, blue is far, and then gray is autoclaved, and the I is inoculated and uninoculated. So, of course, greater biomass in the 80% watering regime, that's to be expected. We also saw much greater biomass between the 5-week plants and the 8-week, that's also to be expected. We saw significant biomass differences by soil type. So the near, as what we saw in the field, the plants planted in near shrub soils had significantly greater biomass than the far. We didn't expect to see quite the difference in the autoclave soil. And we didn't see differences between inoculated and uninoculated. Perhaps we used the wrong fungus. The sequencing data that we will be doing in the future should elucidate some of that. But definitely the plants were responsive to the killing of the biomass and the flush of nutrients that came from autoclaving. And then looking at what's growing on below ground, we have the pot experiment here on the left, and then we wanted to consider the Y field, because these were plants that were of the same physiological age. The plants at the Y field were harvested 4 weeks after germination, and the pot experiment was 5 weeks, so we figured that we could compare those. And what we is to note here is that we see significantly greater hyphal and arbuscular colonization rates in between significant differences between the Y field sites, both far and near, compared to the pot experiment where we used near and far soils in plants of the same age. And we considered the 80% field capacity because during the rainy season, you'll have a rainfall event and then you'll have a drought period. And averaging that, we felt that 80% was nearest to what we could see in the field during the rainy season. And then we see within the pot experiment significant differences between the autoclave soil and the far and near colonization rate, indicating again that when the plant is satisfied, it has its nutrient levels, it's not putting effort into its mycorrhizal symbiont. Curiously, the no differences between the near and far. So, and then the 8 week harvested millet, we see the same trend where we were considering the X field because these plants were harvested 7 weeks after germination. In the field, we harvested ours 8 weeks. And we see significantly greater hyphal and arbuscular colonization rate. The difference is not as great between the X field level and the pot experiment, but it is still significant at the alpha 0.1 level. And within the pot experiment, again, significant differences in far near compared to the autoclave soil. And same thing, no significant differences between the far and near colonization rate. So in conclusion, we believe that there is evidence, just looking at the colonization rate data alone, for a common mycorrhizal network, and we're basing on that on the high congruent hyphal colonization rates in the shrub and millet roots, the combined effect being greater than the sum of the parts, and the significantly greater hyphal and arbuscular colonization rates in millet of the same physiological age in the field compared to the ones in the pot experiment. Conclusion that the combined effect of colonization, which we did further experiments to look into this, all that data has not been analyzed, but that the combined effect might be very significant in contributing to growth differences between near millet plants and far, and that the millet grown in the northern sandier sites are more dependent on AMF. There's evidence that we might have species differences. And last conclusion is that the mycorrhizal fungal plays a very significant role in this agroforestry ecosystem. Further work is done on what's the significance of the same level of colonization in far versus near and the effect of the common mycorrhizal network. What's it doing? So I'd just like to thank my a lot of people, my advisor, Dr. Richard Dick, one of my NSF PIER student colleagues, Nate Bogie in the audience, and many others who've helped me. Thank you.
We have about 3 minutes, but we could use for questions for Matthew or the previous speakers. Any questions?
It's a perennial. It's a perennial evergreen shrub, yeah. No, all of the sites had the shrub in it. So the farmers will coppice the shrub, burn the residue right there, and then just plant right over it, and they allow the millet to grow along with the shrub. So they don't go in and do anything else with the shrub the rest of the season.
I'll assume that the picture
You're talking about the right here. Well, part of our project is looking at just expanding the effect of this intercropping. So the shrub grows randomly in farmers' fields and at uneven densities, and hopefully the results of this work will then be looked at into how can we increase the shrub density within fields, looking at it more as a cover crop type of thing, or increasing the densities, looking at inoculation potentials. So part of the issue here is that we do see these big growth differences, but it's very uneven, and farmers, if they could do what they wanted to, would try to remove the shrub. They don't like the shrubs because they think of it as a weed, and we're trying to say that it shouldn't be seen as a weed. It's doing a lot of good and needs to be. Yeah. Yes, I conducted both mesocosm experiments where I used root exclusion barriers that allowed hyphal contact, and we looked at deuterium transfer signal there in hydraulic lift, as well as that going on in the field, and 15 nitrogen transfer. That data is being analyzed. What's that? Yeah. So it's continuing right now, looking at that.
Thank you. I think...